You know, I used to love Al Michaels. He just doesn't have the oomph in the moments anymore. What a dramatic night in sports last night. Pete Alonso's opposite field three-run homer in the ninth to put the Mets into the next round of the MLB playoffs. And then about an hour and a half later, Cousins to Hodge in overtime to beat Tampa Bay 36-30 in an absolute wild offensive shootout. Great time of the year to be a sports fan. Good morning on this first October Football Friday show. We're down to the final eight in baseball. That's fun. Four games tomorrow to kick off the division series, and football is entering that part of the calendar where we start to figure some things out. Not everything, but some big games on the NFL slate Sunday. Jets-Vikings in London to kick it off at 9:30 Eastern. The 1 p.m. window has Ravens at Bengals, Bills at Texans, in addition to, of course, our game. 4 p.m. window isn't great, but Packers at Rams is huge for both teams. And then Sunday night, Dallas at Pittsburgh. That really feels like a near must-have for the Cowboys this early in the season. And I say that because they then have Detroit, the 49ers, and the Falcons. And then they play the Eagles, the Texans, and, oh, by the way, Washington. Both teams in that one super banged up heading into the Sunday nighter. Tomorrow's college card is not earth-shattering in terms of big matchups, but there are a couple of interesting spots. Fourth-ranked Tennessee on the road tomorrow night at Arkansas. The Razorbacks have been pretty feisty so far. That's an interesting game. I think it's going to be closer than people think. Late night tomorrow night, eighth-ranked Miami at Cal in a big ACC matchup. Miami at Cal. That makes sense. That's, by the way, where ESPN's game day is. So they'll be on the air at 6 a.m. in Berkeley for Cal-Miami. And then the game doesn't start until 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. That's a long day for those kids. I wonder what kind of crowd Cal will produce for game day. There are still now, I think after Cal, five places that have never had game day. Maryland is one of them. Of course, we're focused on 1 o'clock Sunday in Landover. Cleveland comes to town. They are 3-point underdogs in this game. You know, the anticipation, I've talked about it all week, for a game involving our team is as high as it's been in a while, you know, not just here, but throughout the league. And the number one reason for that, of course, is the quarterback, Jaden Daniels. The NFL's communications department puts out every week a list of what they call things to watch for the upcoming weekend's games. There's like a full page on Jaden Daniels. I'm going to read it to you. So this is, you know, a long list. What to watch, you know, what to look for is actually the title of the email that gets sent out to a lot of media types. And it's a lot of different things for each and every game. But for the Washington-Cleveland game, this is just titled Jaden Daniels' Immediate Impact. Washington rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels leads the NFL, as we know, with an 82.1 completion percentage, 87 of 106 this season, surpassing Tom Brady in 2007, 79.2%. By the way, this is a minimum of 75 attempts by a player in his first four games. On Sunday against Cleveland, Daniels can set the NFL all-time record for the highest completion percentage by a player in his team's first five games of a season, a minimum 100 attempts. He's already got that. If he didn't play, he would actually set that record. That record right now is held by Drew Brees through five games of a season, 77.9%. He did that in 2018. So another solid completion day by Jaden Daniels. Doesn't have to be up in the 80s. It could be something, you know, in the mid to high 60s would probably put him in that, you know, high 70s to low 80s mark where he would likely still be in front of Drew Brees. So look for him to potentially set the record for the highest five-game mark. And then they write, the players with the highest completion percentage in any five-game span, not just to start a season, right now he's got a chance to eclipse that. Peyton Manning in weeks 13 through 17 in 2008 went through a five-game span throwing 80.2%. Was that their Super Bowl year? What year was it? Was 2008 their Super Bowl year? The Colts? I think it was. I'm going to look that up. Then there's this. Daniels in weeks 3 and 4 became the first player. 2007? Yeah, that's right. Season 2006, Super Bowl 2007. Because 2007 was the Patriots, and then 2008 was Steelers? Whatever. Let me continue from this. Daniels in weeks 3 and 4 became the first player in NFL history with a completion percentage of 85 or higher in consecutive games. Right? We had the 86 point whatever from Sunday and the 91.3 from the Cincinnati game. On Sunday, he can become the sixth player in NFL history to record a completion percentage of 75 or higher in four consecutive games. The players with a completion percentage of 75 or higher in four consecutive games includes Alex Smith did it in Kansas City, Aaron Rodgers did it in Green Bay, Tom Brady did it in New England, Carson Palmer did it in Cincinnati, and Kurt Warner did it with the St. Louis Rams. If you notice, by the way, the names listed on players that have done this are not, you know, random. You know, like, if he passes the, you know, if he ends up with the highest mark through the first five games, he passes Drew Brees. If he ends up with the highest five-game stretch of any quarterback in history during any part of the season, he passes Peyton Manning in Drew Brees. And then if he ends up with the 75% or higher in four consecutive games, he passes Alex Smith. I wouldn't put him in that same level, but Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Kurt Warner. And then there's this. I mean, it just keeps going. You never see this much written about one player in the NFL communications notes. Daniels has 7 touchdowns, 4 rushing, 3 passing this season, and becomes and became the fourth quarterback in NFL history with 4 rushing touchdowns in his first 4 career games. With 3 combined passing and rushing touchdowns in week 5, he can become the 5th rookie ever with at least 10 combined passing and rushing touchdowns in his first 5 career games, joining Justin Herbert, Cam Newton, Dan Marino, and the quarterback that will be on the other side of the ball on Sunday, Deshaun Watson. There you go. That was it. There were a couple of other tidbits from the breakdown of Jaden Daniels, but it's interesting just to see how he dominated the NFL communications output this weekend. Should be fun. And, you know, as mentioned, I mean, it's a lot about him. It's mostly about him. And it does feel like, to me, this is the first should-win game in a while, although I'm just going to tell you, I don't feel that way. I'm just saying and trying to express what I think is the perception of people around the league, of our fans, NFL pundits. I honestly doubt this is going to be a repeat of the Arizona game. And the reason for that is Cleveland's defense and Cleveland's defensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz. He's got 4 games, Schwartz does, now, of tape on Daniels and this offense. So this is going to be a really good test for Washington. And to me, a very interesting watch, because Schwartz is the first defensive coordinator that Washington will face where the coordinator in the past really is creative and really can come up with some exotics in terms of looks, in terms of pressures, in terms of coverages, and he's got four games of tape to do it. That's not what Todd Bowles had in the opener. Bowles did not have anything really to look at. And then in the case of Schwartz, he's got enough talent to put whatever ideas he comes up with to counteract what Washington's done in their first four games. He's got enough talent to put that to work. And of course, you know, the best player on the field, if it isn't the quarterback of Washington, will be number 95 on the other side of the ball, assuming that he's healthy and ready to go, and that's Myles Garrett, along with Za'Darius Smith, Denzel Ward. They've got players on that side of the ball, not on the offensive side of the ball, but they've got players on that side of the ball with a coordinator who has been very effective in the past at coming up with really good game plans, especially against young quarterbacks. And he's got enough on tape to have looked at to make, put a game plan together to counteract what Washington's done. So I'm really interested from that standpoint. You know, next week is a whole other situation, because not only is Baltimore good defensively, they are very good offensively. This game is going to come down to whether or not Jim Schwartz and Cleveland's defense comes up with something to make Washington's offense look different than it has the last three games. You know, clearly before, and I'll get to my keys to a win over Washington, but one of the keys will obviously be you can't let somebody like Myles Garrett completely upset and disrupt the game, which he's capable of doing. You know, you had in week two, you did have a guy in Dexter Lawrence who had that capability, but not like Garrett. So, interesting matchup to me. It feels like a big game for this time of year, because it is a game that's winnable. It's a game that I think many people expect Washington to win. It's a game that they are favored to win. It's a game in which offensively, Cleveland is limited, but defensively, Washington is limited. But it's a game in which, if you can get this one at 4-1 through five games, you know, and then depending on what happens with Dallas Sunday night in Pittsburgh, you've really jumped out to a bit of a lead in the division. And more importantly, with Baltimore on the horizon, you know, it won't feel like a lost opportunity in the moment. It won't be a step back. I think it's a big spot here early. It's a long season. We talk about that all the time. Things change. Teams ahead of on the schedule may be different by the time you get there. But this is an opportunity. It's also an opportunity at home. You want to be able to protect that home field. It's a game in which it certainly looks like there's a chance that this franchise will have a legitimate home field advantage for the game. Few and far between, obviously, for this franchise over the last, you know, 5 to 7 years of having a legitimate home field advantage. You know, I don't think it's a Cleveland takeover situation. Why would it be? You know, those situations come down the road when Pittsburgh comes to town, when Dallas comes to town, when Philly comes to town, maybe even when Chicago comes to town, who knows? But this is a let's keep the train rolling game. You know, let's not, you know, have a little bit of a derailment here. And it's possible. You know, it is definitely possible. What they did to Arizona was so impressive. But I don't think Arizona had a very good plan offensively. And defensively, they didn't have a prayer with the plan or the talent. Cleveland defensively is the first legitimate test of the season. Todd Bowles having plenty of time to game plan, but what was he game planning for? He didn't know. Schwartz does know. Can't wait for Sunday at 1 o'clock. My keys to a win coming up here shortly. I've got a smell test on the show today. We've got some Kingsbury, some Joe Witt Jr. sound, which was very interesting, something that he said yesterday about what they did against Arizona. Smell test, Cleveland guest we've got on at 11:35, Ben Standing at noon. Denton's going to call in at 11 with a quick college football preview. We'll do that. And this from Lindley. Lindley writes, what happened to power rankings yesterday? Yeah, we kind of forgot to do power rankings. That was my bad. Denton usually reminds me. Chris was in and he's been doing a phenomenal job all week. Toby's in with Chris today. But I just dropped the ball. So I'm going to do some NFL power rankings. And I know why Lindley wants me to do power rankings, because he or she wants to know whether or not I have Washington in the top five. I don't think I've ever done an NFL power ranking segment over the years. I don't know, maybe 2016, I doubt it, where I've had Washington in the top five. Is it possible I had them in the top five when they started 5-2 with Alex Smith? Nah, I was never a believer in that team. I just thought that they weren't good enough offensively. So, yeah, I do have to take just a moment. First of all, I was actually flipping back and forth. The baseball was so dramatic. I mean, there's something about, you know, Major League Baseball postseason in these games. The tension pitch by pitch is so good. And you had this situation in the seventh in a scoreless game where Bowers and Frelick went back-to-back home runs to give Milwaukee a 2-0 lead. And then you get to the ninth inning. And it is, you know, the Mets had done an incredible job in that crazy 8-7 win over Atlanta just to get into this wild card round. But Lindor walks on like 8 or 9 pitches, you know, so a dramatic first at bat to open up the ninth. I mean, it's a great at bat. I think he fouled off a couple of pitches, and then, you know, took a pitch and walked to get on. Then you had an out on a strikeout, and then this Nemo comes to the plate and he singles on an 0-2 pitch. All right, and now Alonso is up, and he works the count 3-1, and this guy who has been a big time home run hitter his entire career, he goes opposite field for a 3-run shot in the top of the ninth to give the Mets a 3-2 lead. They got another lead. You know, Winker, who was in Washington, obviously, he got hit by a pitch, and then he stole second, and he got singled home by Marte for a 4-2 lead. And then you get to the bottom of the ninth, and you don't know what to expect, but it was a really good job by Peterson, who was in for the Mets, to close it out. And he got him up and down in order. And the Mets are off to the next round. And tomorrow you get a quadruple header. You get Detroit at Cleveland. How about a Mets-Phillies series? That's going to be pretty good. Royals-Yankees. For those of you old enough, it seemed like the Royals and the Yankees in the 70s and maybe even into the 80s played in the playoffs every year. And then Padres-Dodgers. 4 really good division series. But then we got to the football last night. I'm not going to be obnoxious here. I'm just going to state facts. Atlanta, I said this about Atlanta after the week 3 loss to Kansas City, in which they got robbed at the end. I mean, Kyle Pitts was mauled in the end zone and there was no call, or that would have likely been another win. But I said after that game, I said, they've got something going there, and they're going to get it going offensively, you watch. And they're going to be in that division race. Their defense is really bad. I know it seems like whenever we've had Kirk conversations in the past, he always seems to have a pretty bad defense, and he has one again in Atlanta. They should make a move for Hassan Reddick if Washington and a couple of other bad defensive teams that have a chance this year don't. But Kirk Cousins last night went absolutely haywire wild in the game. 42, if you didn't see it, 42 of 58 for 509 yards and 4 touchdowns. They got the ball back after an interception. I saw like RG3 and some other people tweet out how that was a bad interception, but he overcame it. Actually, it wasn't a bad interception. It was 4th and 15. They were going for it from deep in their own territory, down 3, and he was pressured and he let go of the ball, which he needed to do, and actually it was a bad play by Tampa. They should have knocked the ball down rather than picking it off, because essentially, the interception ultimately led to them not being able to get a field goal for a 6-point lead. But anyway, some people, it's amazing to me. Like, even professional players don't understand the moment, or don't understand the context of the game and how that actually was a good result, other than a completion for a first down, but a better result than actually throwing an incompletion or taking a sack in that spot. But whatever. It was really kind of one of these games, like the game against Philadelphia was, like the game against New Orleans was, where like the win probability for the Falcons was really low, but they put the game on his back and he delivered in clutch time once again. I mean, it's kind of what he's done. You know, this is where like the narrative has completely strayed from the facts. You know, the can't win in prime time. He's got 3 primetime, you know, incredible performances already this year. It's his 31st career comeback win. He's got more comeback wins over the last 5 years than any other quarterback in the league. Last night, he became only the only quarterback during the Super Bowl era to throw 250 in the first half and then 250-plus in the second half of a game. He was the first quarterback last night to throw for 500-plus yards and lead his team to victory without throwing a single pass in the game, with his team ahead in the game. Last night, between the numbers, over the middle of the field, he was 27 of 33 for 385 yards and 3 touchdowns. That's a staggering plus 25.1 expected points added in a game. It was truly one of the great performances we've seen, and the second time ever in a primetime game that anybody's thrown for 500-plus yards. Brady was the other one. They are very good and very good, very capable offensively. Their defense is bad, but it's starting to come around, and that was a dramatic game. And let me just say, on the flip side, Baker Mayfield's a good quarterback. He has developed into a really good quarterback. He didn't get a chance to touch the ball. This was one of those games, if you were watching it, the coin flip basically had a really good chance of deciding the game in overtime. And Atlanta won it. They took the ball. They went down the field. They scored a touchdown and walked off 36-30. But if Tampa had won the toss, the same thing would have likely happened before. And one last thing, man. They threw at the end of regulation, Atlanta did, with 12 seconds and no timeouts on the clock. They threw a ball over the middle of the field. I remember Belichick doing something on this years ago. It was a Belichick-Brady thing, where they had it timed out, where it had to be 13 seconds or more to throw the ball over the field with no timeouts left, and which would give you enough time to get up and spike it. And when they threw that ball over the middle to Drake London, I thought the game was over. And somehow, the execution of everybody up to the line of scrimmage, handing the ball to the ref, getting the ref to touch it to put it in play, and getting the snap off and getting it spiked with 1 second, was about as good as I've ever seen that done, and as quickly as I've ever seen it done, especially with a throw that went more than 10 yards down the field. You know, this wasn't, you know, a quick pop pass over the middle of the tight end to get an extra 5 yards and everybody's right there. They had to sprint. The play ended up being, I think, a 12-yard play, something like that. And then they had a delay of game before the field goal attempt. And this guy, Koo, who had already had one miss from 41 yards out and had one blocked, had to come on and attempt a 52-yarder, and he made it. Really impressive game, and the two quarterbacks in the game just couldn't have been better. It was an outstanding game. I'll tell you what, man, Mike Evans, is it possible that his career has been underrated? I don't know that he, I don't think that real football fans would ever say that, but I think in terms of star power, Evans has never really been that guy. 10 seasons in the league, this is season 11. All 10 seasons, 1,000 or more yards. He caught his 100th touchdown he had his 100th touchdown. It was actually his 99th career touchdown pass. He's got such great humility, and he's so big, he's so strong, he's so good. But this guy is an absolute lock Hall of Famer. Not that that's a revelation, I think, to football fans. But I think to casual football fans, they don't know him like they know some of the others. Right? Mike Evans is not necessarily, from a brand standpoint, in the same category of Tyreek Hill or Justin Jefferson. I don't think so. All right. My keys to a win over the Cleveland Browns when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. All right. Washington beats Cleveland on Sunday. If my keys to a win over the Browns on Sunday, I'm just going to start with this. I'm concerned about this game, mostly because of the way I think from a handicapping standpoint. This is going to be the either the number one or the number two most heavily bet public team on Sunday's card. Washington will be, and the line's just kind of hung out there at three, which is just a tad troubling. And I think what the odds makers are actually seeing in this game is they're seeing, you know, this opportunity for Cleveland and their defense to make some adjustments. And at the same time, Washington's defense not being very good. And Cleveland having, you know, faced a schedule so far of, you know, teams that just were not great, but defensively were a bit capable. But anyway, let's start with number one. Number one, this game is about third down more than anything else. Listen to the contrasts between these two teams, right? So when Cleveland is on offense, they will be when Cleveland is on offense, they have the worst third down defense in the league. All right, 32nd out of 32 teams, but they will be facing the worst third down defense in the league. So that is a, well, something has to give situation. The worst third down offense against the worst third down defense. Cleveland's offense against Washington's defense. Now, one of the things in just watching a couple of the Cleveland games, the key for them is to convert early on first down. They are terrible in down and distance situations. So if Washington can do what they did against Arizona after that opening drive, what they did actually against Tampa, which is be really good on first down, it's going to be hard for Cleveland to stay on the field if they're not ahead of the chains. But Washington's been a team, you know, in some of these games anyway, especially the Giant game and especially the Cincinnati game to a certain degree, where they stayed ahead of the chains. But the key will be third down Washington's defense against Cleveland's Washington's offense against Cleveland's defense and vice versa, because on offense, Washington has been the best third down offense in the league, and Cleveland's defense has been the seventh best defense on third down. So Let me just summarize that. Third down matchups. Washington offensively, number one in the league. Cleveland defensively, seventh best in the league. Washington on third down offensively, Cleveland the worst in the league against Washington, the worst in the league. So something's got to give on both sides because... you know, one of these two units that are dead last is going to take a step forward after Sunday. Number two on my list after third downs will be important. Number two on my list is just Myles Garrett, okay? Just like Jaden Daniels will be the best offensive player on the field on Sunday, at least based on what we've seen, Myles Garrett, and we'll see how healthy he is, Myles Garrett is a player totally capable of dominating a football game. And, you know, the saying, wrecking a football game. And I think the combination of some of the things they have defensively with Garrett, with Tomlinson up front, with Za'Darius Smith, with Owusu-Koramoah at linebacker, with Ward, you know, and Newsome in that back end. I think this is the best test. Tampa was an excellent test, don't get me wrong, because it was Bowles and they had some good defensive talent. But the opening week is weird. Now with four games each side, this is really going to be a test for Kingsbury. It may be an in-game adjustment game for Kingsbury based on what Schwartz does, but you have to account for Myles Garrett. And I think one of the things you've got to do is you've got to run the football against Cleveland. Myles Garrett is more about first thought, get to the quarterback. Second thought is stopping the run. There's not as much with Myles Garrett a stopping the run mentality on the way to the quarterback. You've got to run the football. Something Vegas did last week. Now, they did it with some receivers and a tight end and some reverses, but Alexander Mattison, the running back that they brought in from Minnesota, he only had five carries in the game, but he had 60 yards, and it wasn't like he got 50 on one carry. He did get 24 on one carry, but still, the other carries were four carries for 26 yards. You know, that's 6 yards, or, you know, close to four and a half yards per pop. Zamir White, the back that got the most carries for Vegas, 17 for 50, 2.9 yards in that one. When you go back to the game that they lost at home against the Giants, Devin Singletary was effective running the football, and they stayed balanced, the Giants did, in that game, with Singletary and Daniel Jones and Tyrone Tracy running the football. But Singletary averaged over 4 yards a carry in that game. Now, there was one big chunk run for Singletary. It's not easy to run against Cleveland. I'm just pointing out that we've seen back-to-back games in which they've run the football pretty well. You go back to the game that they beat Jacksonville on the road in, Travis Etienne had a 4 yards per carry average, but he also had a big chunk run in there as well. So you've got to run the football. You've got to keep Myles Garrett, you know, honest. I think this is one of those games where you've got to be careful with some of your under-center play-action stuff because of Garrett. You know, he plays quarterback. He plays get after the quarterback first. I loved some of the stuff we saw last week in Arizona with Jaden under center and some of the boot action and some of the play action and some of the zone run stuff that we saw off of it. I'm not so sure that's the right thing to do, under center stuff against Myles Garrett. But number two on the list of beating Cleveland, after, you know, third downs both sides, and that being a very kind of interesting matchup because it is, you know, strength against weakness both sides. Strength against strength, excuse me, and weakness against weakness. I just am interested to see, you know, how they handle and how Kingsbury accounts for Myles Garrett in this game. Number three on this list, you have got to stop the run. This is an absolute must for Washington right now. They have been gashed in three straight games against the road, three straight games against the run. It's really three and a half games against the run. I don't know if Chubb's going to be activated for this game. He was pulled off the injured reserve. They have 21 days to bring him back to the active roster. I don't know what that situation is. We'll find out. We've got a guest from Cleveland on at 11:35. But Jerome Ford is more than capable of rushing the football. So it's not going to surprise me if Jerome Ford, who, only carried the ball 10 times against the Raiders but had 58 yards, only carried the ball 7 times against the Jags but had 64 yards. He's averaging over 5.2 yards per carry in four games this year. I would have to think that Cleveland's going to come into this game, that Kevin Stefanski and Ken Dorsey are going to come into this game and say, well, we got to run the football. We got to take the pressure off our quarterback, who is really struggling. By the way, we got to work our quarterback into the run game as well. Which, by the way, Deshaun Watson was last weekend. He was 8 carries for 32 yards. A couple of those were scrambles. But Deshaun Watson in four games has 117 yards rushing, 5.3 yards per. You're going to see, especially in short yardage situations, Deshaun Watson part of the option run game. But you've got to stop the run. Not that these are similar teams at all, but I think the most painful loss of 2022 was New Year's Day, when Washington really just had to win the game and then win the finale against a Dallas team that wasn't going to be playing for much, and they would have been in the postseason. But they lost to Cleveland, remember, at home, 24-10. It was a game in which Deshaun Watson honestly may have had the best game of his tenure since coming back to football after the suspension. That day, he led three consecutive touchdown scoring drives against a defense in 2022 that was top 10 per DVOA. So you don't want to see, right now, the worst offensive football team in the league per the DVOA metric is Cleveland. The best offense in the league is Baltimore. Washington's number two. Cleveland didn't come into that game on January 1st a couple of years ago as a good offensive team. Washington was good defensively, and they went three straight long scoring drives, running the football with Nick Chubb, with Deshaun Watson completing some big passes, and it was over. It went from up 7-3 to 17-7 or 24-7, and it was game over. And it was crazy because Cleveland was not very good offensively and Washington was good defensively. That, of course, was the game that afterwards Grant Paulson had to tell Ron Rivera that there was a chance that they could be eliminated from the postseason in the 4 o'clock window. He had no idea. Embarrassing, honestly. That game was, of course, the Carson Wentz meltdown game, but they were actually up 7-3 at halftime and then could not get off the field in three straight drives in the second half. And it worries me that a bad offensive team is licking their chops saying, well, we can get healthy against this team because we do like to run the football. And we can run the football. It's one of those things we actually can do. It's when we're asked to drop back and throw the football with our quarterback that we struggle. So Washington has to stop the run in this football game. They have been terrible against the run. Now, Joe Witt Jr. said something yesterday about, he was so focused on Marvin Harrison Jr. and it was on him a little bit on some of the big runs. Whatever. We've had 3.5 games of getting absolutely gashed. And I still contend that if Arizona had stuck with the run and if they had included their quarterback into the run game, that would have been a completely different game. Hard to say it would have been a loss when you won 42-14. I certainly understand that. Gotta be better against the run. Next up, Cleveland's pass rush with Garrett and then their cornerback play can be really, really good. Jaden is going to have to be sharp. He has been, of course. But any of the mechanics that get off a little bit, like on that interception, a floating ball is going back the other way. A floating ball's getting caught, you know, by their DBs. You know, Ward, Delpit, Emerson, Newsom. They can make some plays defensively. So I'd love to see, and I think we can see this against Cleveland. I think they can attack deep. You got to protect. But I also think that they can attack horizontally. And I think you'll see a combination of both. I think throws over the middle of the field on Sunday between the hashes will be a little bit more difficult. Lastly, Washington has, given up in terms of returns. You know, they gave up that return on the opening kickoff to DJ Dallas. That area of the game, I was looking at some of the stats on kickoff returns. The numbers aren't anywhere near what they were hoping they would be at all. But Washington right now on kickoff returns is second in the league. And on average on punt returns, believe it or not, first in the league. Now, they don't have a lot of punt returns, okay? They only have two punt returns. Why? Because they haven't made teams punt enough. Kickoff returns, they're first in the league average, but they haven't really taken that many back in the first two games. But I think, special teams on Sunday will be huge in the return game. And I think Dustin Hopkins, who comes back here to kick against Washington for the first time, right? He wasn't with Cleveland when they beat us in 22 on New Year's Day. Was he? I don't think. He may have been, actually. Dustin Hopkins last week missed a huge extra point in the game. And it ended up being really the difference in the game because Cleveland was knocking on the door late and deep into Vegas territory, down four instead of down three. And they were forced to go for a fourth down with about 40 seconds to go instead of kicking a game-tying field goal. Now, Cleveland's 1-3, but I just want you to understand that, take the opener away where they gave up a special teams return to Turpin. So maybe an opportunity for Washington in returns. They beat Jacksonville. They lost to the Giants, but had plenty of opportunities in week three. And then they lost to the Raiders on the road last week. They led 10-0. And then they missed the extra point. Hopkins missed the extra point, which was big. But they've been right there in the last three games, and they've lost two of them. And they're there because defensively they're pretty good. And then I would throw in, especially this week, they can run the football. So third downs, Myles Garrett, got to account for him. Stop the run and make sure you try to get some field position with some special teams opportunities in the return, because they've been effective even though the numbers of attempts have been few and far between. But, starting field position, I've mentioned this, as good as they've been offensively, they've had one possession start in the opponent's territory, and that was after the big return by Austin Ekeler on Sunday. And then lastly, we're going to find out at 12 probably, but if you don't know this, Brian Robinson Jr. has missed two straight practices with what they're calling a knee injury. I don't know what the chances of him playing on Sunday will be. We'll find out from Ben at noon. Austin Ekeler was full go yesterday, so it does look like they'll have Ekeler back for the game. But Brian Robinson Jr. Has been huge in these first four games of the year. Now, if they've got Ekeler back, I'll feel better about it. It'll be interesting to see who they pull up. They pulled up Rodriguez last week. He didn't really see the field. Would they pull Rodriguez up in the if Brian Robinson can't go? I think that would be the case. What I would wonder is, would Rodriguez get much more action than he did last week after being called up, when Brian Robinson Jr. and Jeremy McNichols were enough? This week, is Eckler going to become your first down back? Is McNichols going to be your first down back if Brian Robinson Jr. is out? Or do you bring up Chris Rodriguez and make him, you know, the occasional, at the very least, first down back? That'll be interesting. Let's hope he is on the field, Brian Robinson Jr. Also think it'll be very interesting to see Jordan McGee if he's activated for this game. They loved him over the summer. All right. They loved Jordan McGee over the summer. Thought this kid was potentially a starting linebacker for this team. Got hurt during the preseason. And it's very possible he'll be active and ready to go for his first opportunity of the year. Those call-ups, I think, would happen tomorrow from injured reserve. He's eligible, though, to be called up. Interested to see the kid from Temple get a shot on the field Sunday. All right, my prediction later on in the show. Coming up at 11, Denton will give me a quick college football preview. Smell test next hour. Cleveland guest next hour. Something that we've learned about the NFL through the first 4 weeks of the year when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com. Are you used to the NFL kickoff rule yet? I'm getting used to it. It's fine. But let me just tell you, the results are not anywhere near what the league wanted. The league was expecting that the return rates on kickoffs this year with the new kickoff rules would be somewhere between 50 and 60% of the kickoffs would be returned. Only 29% of the kickoffs have been returned through the first 4 weeks of the season. Now, that is up from last year's 17% during the same time frame, but it's still the third lowest return rate since 2000. More than two-thirds of the kickoffs have gone for touchbacks, as coaches have definitely chosen sort of the certainty of field position at the 30-yard line over more of a risk-reward of allowing a live return. We'll see what the NFL does about it. They could tweak this rule and penalize teams for touchbacks and bring it out to the 35-yard line, or if they'll just continue with what we have. But it's certainly not been a major factor in the first 4 weeks of the season. When weather gets a little worse and you get more of the kickoffs that can't get to the end zone, even though they're trying, especially in outdoor games, you'll probably see more returns. But this thing isn't anywhere near what they projected it to be. The injury data, by the way, is not out yet on this play, but the commissioner says he believes it will look very good. When we come back, Denton's going to call in, and we're going to do a quick college football preview. We'll go to Cleveland and get an update on the Browns at 11:35. Smell test this hour as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.